The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What's being done to identify and address the root causes of family violence in San Antonio? The city has a problem with domestic violence, also called intimate partner violence, and with child abuse, where a minor is violently attacked, neglected, or sexually assaulted by a parent or a guardian. We are supposed to have systems in place to prevent this type of behavior and then prosecute and punish those who weren't caught in time. But when things go wrong, they are, quote, falling through the cracks, or is something else happening? Is the system, does it have really broken parts, big parts missing? So as a community, what are we doing? Are we doing enough? There's lots of ways for you to join our conversation as we talk about family violence and child abuse in our community. You can call in at 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. And again, the number is 210-614-8980. You can call in. You don't have to give your name. You can just tell us. We really want to hear stories about what you see, because this really is going to take a community response. No one person or agency is going to have all of the answers. We really have got to hear from everyone about what you see, what you've experienced, what you've gone through. 210-614-8980. With us today to talk about this is Molly Cox, President and CEO of SA 2020, Annette Rodriguez, President and CEO of the Children's Shelter of San Antonio. Marta Palayasi is the CEO of Family Violence Prevention Services. Welcome all of you for here today.
Thank you.
Molly, tell me more about, you do every year with SA 2020, mm-hmm. you put out an impact report about other goals for San Antonio, and you look at indicators that show, and you have goals to try to, cut down on family violence and child abuse. And what's your report have?
Yeah, I mean, every year we put out our report, and you can find it obviously online at sa2020.org, but more specifically, we this year decided we really needed to highlight areas that have not been moving, that we keep talking about as having challenges and yet still have not seen significant shifts in. And family violence and child abuse has been consistently moving in the wrong direction. The child abuse and neglect is currently measured by confirmed child abuse cases, right? And what we started to see was that those confirmed cases were going down, and yet calls on child abuse and neglect were going up. And that's across our community in every single zip code. So when we see, oh, hey, the confirmed cases are going down, we're doing better, and then we ask why. Why is it going down? And then we find out, no, it's not that it's doing better. It's that our system can't handle the amount of calls that are actually happening. We're not confirming cases at the rate that we should be. We know that we have a challenge. And then we also know in domestic violence, which is what we're currently tracking, that the number of family assaults have continued to rise. We saw male intimate partner women being killed by male intimate partners had quadrupled between 2014 and 2018. And we also know that this problem is not just family violence and child abuse, that it has so much more sort of wrapped up inside of it, right? We know that in our community, we're having challenges around early childhood, that's maternal and infant health, all the way through early education. We're having challenges in education and workforce development. We are having challenges in mobility, right? Stressors on getting to the places that you need to be able to get to and having access. And then affordable housing is also a challenge in our community. And if we don't start looking at all of these major complex community challenges as interrelated, then we're not actually getting to the crux of how do we prevent this from occurring rather than having to intervene after something already takes place.
Annette Rodriguez, President and CEO of the Children's Shelter of San Antonio. So my problem with this issue is that it's so unbelievable that it's hard to believe that it is as bad as it actually is. But then you see it every day when the children arrive at the children's shelter, and you know you can't turn away from it. It's right there in front of you, and you're looking for a way to address it. But what's really going on out there? How bad is it really?
The numbers, as Molly said, the numbers are going up. The numbers of investigations are going up. When you look at the Department of Family and Protective Services and their projections for the next 2 to 3 years, they're anticipating increases of children coming into care over the next several years. And if we just look at the DFPS data book that came out just recently, there was an increase of confirmed child abuse cases for Bexar County, 5,800, which was almost 300 more than we had last year. Also, the department just recently issued a child fatality report a couple weeks ago for 2018, and it's one of the highest numbers that we have seen in 6 years. So we had 90 fatalities due to abuse across the state of Texas, not just in Bexar County. And so it is alarming. We need to see what is going on and what can we put in place to ensure that these horrific tragedies don't happen and that we're getting to families right away. And just to speak to the fatalities very quickly, when we drill down and look at the report, the majority of those families were not on Department of Family and Protective Services radar. Mm-hmm. These were families that had no connection to the department. They were out in the community. They could have been served by organizations, or someone could have said something, and they went undetected and children died.
So when you say they went undetected by the system, but probably there were people around them that probably saw things that they could have alerted responders?
Potentially, yes. We don't know for sure. The report doesn't go into that level of detail, but potentially a teacher might have seen something, and it could be that there were reports made on these children, but it would just, after the investigation was completed, maybe it was warranted that a removal wasn't needed. So it could be undetected, or someone did report and there wasn't a removal made. But again, I don't have the actual details.
Sure.
For every one of those.
But Marta Pelaez with Family Violence Prevention Services, are you seeing things getting worse?
Absolutely. 28 fatalities, just to talk about that. 28 fatalities last year in Bexar County, making it per capita the highest rate in the state of Texas. Comparatively, the year before, there were 11 fatalities in Bexar County. So we are looking at the incidence of assault and fatalities alone that is just unrecorded. It's without any precedent.
And you're talking about women who are being murdered?
All of these were women who were murdered by a male
intimate partner.
And just to add another level of complexity, all of them were shot dead.
So the guns.
Yes, the guns.
And any idea why the increase?
I wish it were that simple that I could tell you right now this is what it is. However, it is a very complex problem. Just like Molly said, it is surrounded by a myriad of other elements that play a role in the lives of these people. And we continue to see how the community is increasing its level of interest in all of these, but there is categorical funding, categorical treatment of those problems, and not until we all come around with one voice to address these issues, we're going to continue to see the increases.
So we need to be
afraid.
Shouting that this is a problem.
Yes.
This needs to be addressed. It cannot be. We cannot look away.
Absolutely.
All right, we got to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some of the upstream factors that are in our community that are contributing to this. We'll take some calls, 210-614-8980, Family Violence, Child Abuse in Bexar County on The Source. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about family violence and child abuse. It's happening all around us all the time. Even right now, there's a major story in San Antonio headlines. An Air Force major based here in San Antonio, he bought a shovel, an axe, gasoline, and a burn barrel the day after his wife was reported missing, and then he tried to destroy the receipt. That's according to investigators. Andre McDonald was indicted on Sunday of a charge of tampering smearing or fabricating evidence of the disappearance of his wife, Adrienne McDonald, who police believe is now dead. They are searching for her, but it is he and this the husband is a suspect, but he has not been charged in this disappearance or murder. But this sounds familiar to many of us. Marta Pelayas, the CEO of Family Violence Prevention Services. As we talk about family violence in this case right around us, it rings awful familiar.
We've been there. We've been there before, right? Right now he is not being charged, but he's looking mighty guilty. And it is the intimate partner, husband, boyfriend, the first one that law enforcement looks at, because more times than not, he probably is the one at fault.
Well, there is a trend here. We've seen it locally, and it's quadrupled. The number of women who were killed by their male intimate partners in the last few years has shot up incredibly.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's so something is happening there. All right, let's go to the phones, 210-614-8980. Scott is on the line. Scott, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. So I would like to just talk about my experience. I grew up in an abusive household, and when I had kids, I knew that would be an issue for me because I know it's a cyclic, it's a cycle, and I wanted to break that cycle. I reached out to United Way and Catholic Charity. They really wouldn't talk to me. They put all the focus towards my wife, and I just felt like there weren't resources out there for someone that was raised in an abusive household. And then when we divorced and went to the judge, there was all these accusations. Most of them were false, but I did have anger issues, and they gave me a 20-minute anger management course, which did nothing. Fortunately, I had good insurance and was able to get diagnosed with PTSD and get treatment for that. But I'm just thinking about all those people out there that are raised in abusive households, especially the men that don't get the treatment that they need to break that cycle.
All right, Scott, thanks for calling in. Violence against women is a men's issue.
Absolutely it is, in less numbers.
And kudos to Scott for taking personal responsibility, acknowledging that he has vulnerabilities and that trying to come up with his own way of dealing with that. But it would be nice if we had some sort of wider method of trying to help people, not as self-monitoring as Scott.
And this is where the education of the community comes into play.
Yeah.
Because anger management has absolutely nothing to do with domestic violence. It's very counterindicated. Anger management is a brief intervention that deals with the world outside, telling the person that it is not your fault. All you have to do is remove yourself from the situation. There is no accountability, no responsibility on the part of the perpetrator of the abuse.
And Molly Cox, you wanted to join us?
Yeah, I think that there's I like the idea of sort of educating the community at large, right? So we're about to enter into Child Abuse Awareness Month is April. Child Safe does Cardboard Kid Campaign, which shows you sort of how many kids have been abused over the course of the last year. Whenever you see a cardboard cutout of a kid, you know that kid is actually representative of a real kid in our community. And then there's some really fantastic sort of collaborative offerings. So to Scott's point, right, he came from an abusive home, this idea of sort of breaking a cycle. Adverse childhood experiences happen all the time. It's that upstream space of what occurs when a child, when we start to see over and over again this happening, and then you become an adult who is also dealing with trauma and then also potentially doing that. And I know Metro Health has been leading, the city's Metro Health Department has been leading on the ACEs sort of collaborative. And I know that's something, right, that Annette sees all the time and is probably participating in.
Yes, and I can speak to that. And I do also just want to touch on a couple points that Scott made. I appreciate Scott's call. For many years, males have been underrepresented in the services that we offer. Normally and typically, we have focused on women. And to Scott's point, actually, United Way funds several dads programs, and the Children's Shelter has one of those programs. It's called the Compadre and Compadre program that's been running for over 6 years now with incredible success. And the focus is on fatherhoods and helping them be reflective of how they were parented so that they can change the trajectory and change that pattern so that we can can break the cycle. And to Molly's point, the Children's Shelter is one of the tri-chairs of the South Texas Trauma-Informed Care Consortium, where we are bringing together different sectors of the community, the educational sector, the justice sector, local government, philanthropy, funders, all coming together so that we can talk about trauma, we can talk about the ACEs assessment. We know that children who experience trauma, who never heal from the trauma, grow up to be adults who are still struggling with that trauma, and triggers will then turn into behaviors, and that turns into then symptoms that then turn into other issues. And so the South Texas Trauma Consortium is working on creating a Bexar County that is trauma-informed and trauma-sensitive when we're working with different populations across Bexar County.
And Annette Rodriguez, at the Children's Shelter San Antonio, that the healing begins immediately when children show up at your facility.
Absolutely. So the Children's Shelter has been in our community for over 100 years, and we recognize the importance of doing trauma work. So we started that about 5 years ago, and have others. And so that's why we're coming together to ensure that the sooner we can get to the child and help them heal, the better off we know that child will be, that they won't manifest some of the issues and challenges that individuals do when they carry that trauma with them.
Right. So I'm going to get to these calls, but just real quick. So it looks like we're saying, as we trying to figure out upstream interventions before people become violent and things get horrible and they end up in the news, and the first step is probably trying to break the cycle and helping children heal before they become adults with problems. Let's go to Diane on the call. Hey, Diane, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I am just echoing what Scott said. Oddly enough, no, it's not odd at all. I was abused as a child. So we are what we know. We grow up and we are what we learned. Unfortunately, I thought I was going to be a better parent. For my first child, I wasn't so great. I did abuse her. And then I married somebody who abused me. And oddly enough, Oprah Winfrey's shows pulled me out of this ignorance, and that's what it is. And I was able to change. And I also started going to Codependence Anonymous. And I found out who I was through listening to other people's stories, which were the same as mine. And I pulled myself away from all that. I am not even near the person I was. My daughter and I have healed. My mom and I, not so much. Probably never will. But we have to definitely break the cycle. And it's great to hear somebody else saying it. Scott, kudos to you, dude, because this was a hard thing to do, to come to that self-awareness. You are not what you know. You learn something new. You become a better person. Put billboards up through the city. Break the cycle. Break the cycle. Break the cycle.
Diane, thank you so much for calling in, and kudos to you for calling in. And I know it takes a lot of guts to be able to come forward and talk about these things. Molly Cox, can we have these types of conversations, allow people to express, we have people who come forward and say, I'm doing better now, you can too.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, thank you so much for calling and sort of sharing your story with us in such an honest way. You know, when we think about the SA 2020 community vision, the sentence that always comes up for us at SA 2020 is one of the sentences that our community wrote: the entire community, individuals, businesses, local government, nonprofits, faith-based organization will take responsibility for our collective well-being. There is not another city in the United States of America that has that written down as an actual thing that we are actively working together towards in our community. So of course, we have to open the dialogue for something like this. We have to do more education. We have to be willing to cross-sector collaboratively come together to have not only difficult conversations, but also how are we funding this work? How are we elevating the work? How are we speaking truth to power? And if funding gets cut for something that is upstream, like mental health, how are we then, as corporate giving or as individuals, then filling that gap? And I feel like if there is a community that can figure it out, it's San Antonio.
Another caller. This is Scott T. Scott T., welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks. I worked for MARTA for about 7 years, so I'm very familiar with the philosophy, and she's spot on. Anger management courses are fairly valueless. And the other thing I want to say is the man who the Air Force personnel, that wasn't the first time he behaved that way. And so a lot of times, unless there's an intervention earlier, this is one of the problems. And Marta's again right. This is a man's problem. This is how we see women, how we objectify women, and how we struggle regulating our own emotions. So I think a lot of those things, prevention, as well as what the other panelists said about trauma. But you intervene very early, help men understand gender roles and where they fit. And I think that might make a big difference.
Scott T., thank you for the call. So Marta Pelaez, CEO of Family Violence Prevention Services. Frequently, the word that we come back to with men who have these issues is control. They want control. How do we get them to realize there is no control? You have to develop a higher level of understanding of your relationships.
Perhaps at this point, it is of some value to define what domestic violence is. It is a progressive pattern of behaviors that aim to control the victim in a relationship through emotional, psychological, financial, sexual means. Progressive and pattern are the two key words in that definition. So when we are confronted with a fatality, that's the end of the cycle for that victim. That family, that unit, had a possibility of preventing that death had that man, if it is a man, had that man been intervened. The battery's intervention prevention program is an accredited program that is monitored and funded by the Criminal Justice Department. It challenges the attitudes of these men. And I was talking to one such man yesterday afternoon, and it was very revealing, very, very introspective on his part to identify how, for him, it was the generational element in his life. He had been abused by his father, who later left him, abandoned him, who had been abused by his father, who had been abused by his father, and you get my point. It is the normal in their lives. So those conversations need to be had. People need to lay it all out in front of them so that we can come in and the community entirely can come in and support their efforts to have those introspective moments and address where they are and what kind of impact they're having on their loved ones, as they say. They claim to love these people. However, they are inflicting pain on the children. They are killing their partners. So it is a collaborative effort that we need to have and a very candid effort that we need to explore.
But this is something we cannot arrest our way out of. Of course, when someone kills someone, yeah, the judicial system steps in. But we need to come to conclusions and provide support way before anyone gets that and address this fetish of control and make people realize you can never have control. You have to be able to understand how to work in cooperation with your loved one. How do we get there? Domestic violence doesn't discriminate. Anyone can be a victim of domestic violence, regardless of age, ethnicity, sexual orientation, economic status. We continue. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about family violence and child abuse. A recent SA 2020 Impact report looking at San Antonio statistics shows that we have a major problem, and it's getting worse when it comes to child abuse here in San Antonio and also violence against women. What's behind that? What are the resources that are available? How can we coordinate the community efforts that we have or community response to prevent these actions before they become headlines? 210-614-8980 is the number to call. We want to hear your stories. We want to see hear what you've gone through. And you don't have to give us your name, but really, no one has the answer. This is going to be a community answer. Where is all this anger coming from? Why can't we deal with it in a more positive way? 210-614-8980. Tony is on the line. And Tony, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. You know, many times you hear about physical violence, but, you know, abuse is not simply physical abuse. It can be emotional abuse. A father, a mother comes home from work and things didn't go well where they work, but you can't to take your hostility out on the boss. You won't have a job, so you come home and you take it out on your family. Or, you know, the bullies don't just live in the schoolyard. You can actually have a bully as a family member, a brother, a sister, or anybody else like that. And so you have you have the family members taking their frustration and hostility out on each other, and you have a very emotionally unstable atmosphere, and that's how you grow up as a family member, and then it could be passed on.
Tony, thank you for those comments, and let's go to Annette Rodriguez, President and CEO of the Children's Shelter of San Antonio. The children who arrive at your facility, they have gone through physical hell, but also emotional hell as well.
Absolutely, and usually the scars on and the bruises will heal and those go away, but the internal scars are the ones that children carry on forever. And again, if you don't have the right interventions that are trauma-informed and get to the root causes of what they experience, then they're going to manifest themselves and they're going to become young adults or adolescents, young adults, that then those behaviors will be played out in our community, either with those that they're intimate with, those that they're relationships with, whether it's family that's close to them, or once they get into partner relationships, then it will be triggered. And to the caller's point, if the child never learned how to cope with that anger and didn't know how to cope with the experiences that they went through, then it is going to manifest itself. And if they don't hit, they may hit hard with words. Those are just as violent and just as hurtful as the physical hits sometimes. And sometimes with some of the kiddos that we have worked with, the older youth had said, if they got both from their family or from their parents, they sometimes would say they would much rather the physical hurt, because that would end right away, versus the barrage of verbal hurt that was just constant.
And there's a substantial cost of family violence in our community, of course, to individuals and the long-term loss of human potential and just ugliness and inhumanity that goes on. But this is something that costs the community quite a bit in human resources. And if we could dedicate more, attention and time and effort to the early impact, maybe we could avoid long-term cost down the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're sort of hitting on, right, is that if we are serious about decreasing family violence, domestic violence against women, child abuse, then we have to start thinking of it more holistically. How are we really jumping in at the as a forethought? What are we doing?
But there's also the ledgerness of this whole thing. Some people are going to look at this as, looking at the budget sheet and saying, rather than having to house people for 40 years inside a max, prison, if we can deal with them early in life and help them become well-adjusted so they don't become a predator, then it makes better sense to the taxpayer.
Of course. And it also, right, like if we use this same sort of thing, I think it was Shirley Gonzalez in Council District 5 worked with Family Service to create a Promadores program just in her council district. That's literal. We're using local policymaking to put dollars in the budget to say, if people in your community are speaking to you about intervention ahead of time, right, let's get in front of you so that we can make sure you have the resources and the stability that you need to be better in your family. And that's the kind of thing that we should be thinking through. Like, how are we jumping in beforehand to say, let's make sure you maintain a fantastic job, that your family is doing well, that we're not looking at it later, right? We think through all the times that we talk about trauma and the idea that children with mental health issues, 1 in 5 kids struggle with a mental health issue. And if we don't look at that now, then it becomes 1 in 4 adults struggle with a mental health issue. So it just continues and continues and continues and compounds.
I'd like to add to that, also, San Antonio is one of the fastest growing cities.
Yeah.
And when you have growth the way we are experiencing it, our issues just don't go away. They get bigger. And so as we're developing city budgets and county budgets and state budgets, we need to take that into account. We need to make sure that we've got the funding and the resources necessary to be able to attack and approach those issues that we know are just going to continue to get bigger as our city gets bigger.
I need to get to these callers. I'm sorry. Let's go to Aurora. Aurora, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. I have a question. I'm a teacher, and I want to know what do teachers have to do to help in denouncing child abuse. Yesterday, we had an issue with my daughter. She heard a conversation in her high school because her teacher was trying to make a denouncement, and the authorities from the school said not to call police because they didn't have any complete proof to make a denouncement. So what we should do as teachers?
I know that there are programs that are training teachers to give them some idea of what they have to work with. Anyone on the panel?
I would say in the state of Texas, everyone is a mandated reporter. Whether you suspect, if you've seen it, or if you've heard about something that's concerning, I would say report it and let it go through the process and get looked at and investigated if you're talking about child abuse. And so there's the 1-800 child abuse hotline that you can call, or you can also go online to the Department of Family Protective Services website and do an online statement.
And did you want to just say something, Marta?
I just wanted to precisely say exactly what Annette just said. There is an obligation on the part of the a teacher to report. There are other professions that have also that mandate. That would be attorneys, physicians, nurses, counselors, psychologists. They all have the obligation to report what they're seeing in terms of child abuse.
And frequently teachers, you know, when something happens to a child, child stops going to school, there's no explanation from the family, or the child shows up with a lot of bruises or chronic dirty clothes, or actually if they've gone through trauma suddenly, then they've lost actually the ability to learn and to focus. And so the teachers are actually on the front line trying
Absolutely.
To provide some sort of relief and understanding, but they're overwhelmed as well. Why add this back to the teacher's plate? Are we funding school counselors and other supporters that need to be present in the schools? Molly Cox?
Yeah, and you've also sort of hit on several things, right? A child who is neglected or abused at their home or not showing up the way that they need to get through their education system, right? So then that continues. A woman at home who is being abused, whether verbally or physically, is not showing up to jobs the way that she needs to show up, right? So it is a community problem, which is why it's important to not only understand that it's mandated by Texas, it's mandated by you live in a community with other people, and if you see something, you should say something.
Yeah, but people are worried about their own liability and how it could impact them. Let's go to Derek. Derek, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me. I'm serving the military, and we're constantly being trained about something which is called SHARP, sexual assault, sexual harassment, sexual assault reporting program. And we're always told, if you see something, say something. I don't know if you have any programs that you are, or any information that you're putting out at schools, high schools, middle schools, because this stuff happens early on in some young children's lives. I, for one, came out of a broken home, and I didn't have any resource or anybody to talk to because I didn't want to seek out help, because then other people would know I had an issue. So my question is, would you be willing to give this information out at a pep rally and get it over generally to a school population?
All right.
That is an easy answer, yes. However, so many times the obstacle is not necessarily with us, the providers, but it is with the principal of the school or with the superintendency. Sometimes it's a public policy issue where a certain program, life skills program, cannot be delivered in a school because it is against the standing of the legislature to include certain, for example, sexual education onto kids. So there isn't a standard. I am in complete agreement. All of these interventions and all of these educational approaches should be in schools at all ages.
I do want to go back to what you said earlier, Molly Cox, sure, about the Promotoras Child Abuse Prevention Program,
sure,
that is being piloted here in District 5 in San Antonio. And so this is, we have individuals who have gone through training. They're working closely in the neighborhood. Many people may have heard about Promotoras working with the health community. So this is also very vital. They're kind of like the cop on the beat for mental health in the neighborhood. They are identifying adverse childhood experiences. They place parents at, they help the parents parent better by being just a community support. And so this is something that's interesting and probably should get a little more attention.
Yeah, this idea of a community health worker, right, as somebody who lives in your neighborhood and knows who you are and can come forward. We highlighted
everyone
it in
knows
our report.
And trusts
you know
and
this person. We highlighted in our report. You can read more about it. And it was a collaborative out of City Council District 5.
All right, we're taking one more break. We've got some callers on the board. We'll get you on the air when we come back. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The number of family assaults continues to rise here in Bexar County. The number of women killed in Bexar County by a male intimate partner quadrupled from 5 in 2014 to 26 in 2018. Aggravated assaults includes assaults where a weapon was used, most often a gun. We're talking about family abuse here in Bexar County. The number is 210-614-8980. And David is on the line. David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon to you and your panel, David. First time, long-time listener, first-time caller. How are you?
Doing great. Go ahead.
So if we're talking about issues where it stems from maybe abuse from the male figure in the house, the dad, you know, I think as far as the male individual goes, I think there's a lot of innate fear there. You know, fear about being able to provide, fear about the job market, you know, fear about, you know, keeping up with, the accommodations that they're used to. There's a lot of innate fear there, you know, fear as a parent. And I think that's going unchecked. You know, that's a conversation that, you know, number one, I think could be best held and supported, you know, with men talking to other men. But we're not having that conversation. And, you know, we're certain, you know, these guys certainly aren't going to have it with their wives because then, you know, they don't want to exhibit, you know, any indications of fear. So I think that that's a conversation that men need to be having with each other.
All right, David, thank you for the call. I think men could have those conversations with their wives and talk openly about their vulnerabilities and talking about how can we address these things together. When you are in a two-parent household, you are working together and addressing these things. Maybe that's one way to look at it. But, you know, how do men figure out a healthy coping mechanisms when they got to deal with all these harsh realities? Marta Palayas, a CEO of Family Violence Prevention Services.
We need to be cognizant of the fact that about 98% of domestic violence is committed by men unto women. So, but the caller is very right. We need to address the needs of the men, and we need to listen to the perpetrators of abuse. We need to elevate their challenges so that we can all hear what it is that they have experienced and where their abusive behaviors come from so that we may offer some solutions. A child that has been raised in an abusive home with no intervention, that little boy will grow up to emulate his father. A little girl in the very same home will grow up to emulate the mother, and the mother is the victim. So that those two children will occupy their respective roles when they grow up as victims and perpetrators.
But we want them to become not victims but survivors.
Yes. We can talk about the semantics of the
phenomenon. No, it's like I am no longer
yes.
held captive to those things that happened to me. Now I have been able to progress beyond that.
Right. But we're talking about, in this case, we're talking about the perpetrators. I would love, while we continue to deliver services to the victim and adult and children victims of domestic violence, I would love to, at the same time, to make a space, to create a space for the perpetrators to be heard so that, conceivably, if we address the perpetrators' challenges, we don't have to talk about so many victims in the future.
But it seemed like we have a problem. Like, okay, here's a comparison. Like, if we had, like, neighborhoods where homes were just bursting into flames and we're just running around all the time trying to put out houses that are on fire, and then we never hit pause and say, why are houses bursting into flames? And then we realize, oh, they have all this gasoline and dirty rags and sparks and all these things that are flying around. We need to go into these homes with these items in there and then figure out how to remove those things so they don't burst into flames to begin with. So we know that there are people that don't have good coping mechanisms. They are in codependent relationships. Maybe there's substance abuse going on there. How do we get to a point where we can prevent these things from exploding to begin with, Molly Cox?
Yeah, I mean, you're asking the question that we try to elevate all the time, right? And I say, why? Why is something occurring? Why is it happening? And to be fair, right, no one's walking through their neighborhood and noticing that there's gasoline inside a house. You notice it when the house is on fire. And then you're like, oh, the house is on fire. I got to go get some water and put the fire out. So you're literally highlighting the thing that is, right? All of this is so interrelated. We were talking very quickly off air about homeless students and homeless women, right? Homelessness is also a challenge when it comes to family violence, domestic violence, child abuse, right? All of these, mental health, substance abuse, there are so many things that are interrelated. And I think what we try to do, because it's so complex, is make it so easy. Like, we'll just, it's a buckshot. It's like, no, it's so complex and we have to, it's onion and we just keep peeling the layers, right?
To that, you need to add that in the case of domestic violence, it is such an intimate, personal thing. Who wants to recognize that the one decision that you made several years ago to go with that partner instead of that other one, it's a failed one. That is a very, very difficult, decision to make.
I got to go to the phones here with Lupe. And Lupe, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm hoping that the panelists can recommend some written material to give to someone who I believe is abusing their children, not physically, that will explain first that the parent-child relationship is not meant to be an adversarial one, and two, something that explains, maybe gives examples of what emotional abuse is. Thank you very much.
Well, Lupe, thank you for that call. What's out there? How can we help people do better? When they know better, they do better. Let's help them know better. What's out there?
You know, it's
Annette?
The caller asked for written materials, and I respect that. That's a good place to start, but that's not going to get someone to the realization that that they're involved in that cycle or in that pattern. Relationships need to be built. And the way we get to healing and the way we get to change behavior is through interventions that rely on those relationships with skilled individuals who've been trained either as counselors or as interventionists to be able to change that projection. And oftentimes it takes courage from someone to reach out to that individual and say, here's what I'm witnessing, here is what I'm looking at, well, this is what I am concerned about, and having that frank conversation with that individual. That individual's not going to listen or to be reflective on a piece of paper, but rather when they hear it from someone who matters to them, who's important in their lives, then the message might get through. And I would say to that caller, if she has someone in her life and she's not comfortable about having that conversation, reach out to different professional groups and explain her situation and her story. And there are counselors who can talk her through and say, here's how you might want to approach that first conversation and give her some talking points, and then also continue to be a resource for her as she tries to broach that conversation with that person.
Back to the phones, 210-614-8980 with Art. And hi, Art. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I several thoughts. I think the elephant in the room for all of us is that the schools are the biggest recipient of our tax dollars. And until we make it in such a way where the school districts can save face or look well for these programs, it's probably not going to take. And, you know, the adrenaline addiction kind of phenomenon that occurs in these family dynamics, it's all these people go for rides, both the male and the female, and, you know, birds of a feather, they're attracted to each other, the bad boy attraction, all of those dynamics could possibly be taught in a kind of a psychology course or communication course and give a young girl a chance.
And Art, thank you for the call. Art says back to the schools, but schools are a major part of our community, but they're not the entire part of our community. It's going to take a lot of community efforts and coordination in order to come up with comprehensive solutions. So Molly Cox, who are the major actors in trying to deal with these things?
Everyone, right? Like your neighbor, your policymaker, your school, your teacher, your principal, your faith-based organization, like somebody that you're seeing in there. Anybody that you've, your doctor, your nurse.
But still, I mean, I know the city council is trying to figure out traffic jams and bringing jobs to San Antonio.
Well, the way that you say that, but right, they just recently passed the Women's Equity Resolution. And inside the Women's Equity Resolution was, what is the city's policy driving on domestic violence? Because our domestic violence rates are going up exponentially. And the city of San Antonio, particularly through the Department of Human Services and our Metro Health Department, are putting dollars into health and wellness programs for our women. So there are policies that can come out that will decrease domestic violence if we're doing it in a concerted effort of cross-sector collaborative community building, that it is not just about someone, a perpetrator or a victim. It is about everyone and how perpetrators and victims live among us everywhere.
It's going to take resources, and resources demand being made a priority. Mm-hmm. And so is this a priority, Marta Palayas, for the community?
I was going to jump in as you were talking, and I was going to say that that is an attitude of the city that is very new, mm-hmm. and it's very welcomed. Mm-hmm. It took me to go before council and the mayor and actually challenge that body to say, do not congratulate me once again on what we are doing, because it is you are a partner with me. I will fulfill some of those programs and goals, but yes, you have to be the driving force.
Yes. All right, Marta Palayas, CEO of Family Violence Prevention Services, Annette Rodriguez, President and CEO of the Children's Shelter San Antonio, Molly Cox, President and CEO of SA 2020. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.